America Trends Podcast is part of the MHNR Network. MHNRnetwork.com.
What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived, and it's just in time.
Welcome back to America Trends. I'm Larry Rifkin. The United States Postal Service, one of the few services referenced directly in the Constitution. While the great parks are arguably America's best idea, the post office isn't that far behind. Think about how sprawling a land we are, and yet how these carriers find us in the most remote places with important information. Maybe you ran excitedly to the mailbox for a note from a soldier far away, or a loved one that you never heard from, and all of a sudden that letter showed up. Or perhaps the acceptance to the college you really wanted to get into. It's been crucial to our everyday lives, and yes, we have other delivery services today, but for many it remains essential. USPS has come in for criticism in the recent period, and we wanted to do a podcast to focus on this important, uniquely American institution and consider its future in the digital age. It's next on America Trends.
With me on America Trends is Dave Lewis, and he is the president of a group called Snailworks, and you can find them at snailworks.com. I've been looking for someone to talk to about the future of an old service here in America, older than our country itself, and that being the United States Postal Service. And I saw that Dave was quoted in an article in USA Today, and Dave, I'm really curious because you're president of Snailworks. I was reading in this article that you track mail delivery for businesses and nonprofit groups, and you were commenting on how genuinely awful the service has been of late. But tell us how you intersect with the Postal Service.
Sure, Larry. As we work with a system the Postal Service has, it's called Informed Visibility. And so this is their own mail tracking system. Every piece of mail, if you look at it, it has a little barcode on it. That's called an intelligent mail barcode. As a piece of mail travels through sorting equipment at the Postal Service, it picks up that barcode, and that barcode identifies what the piece of mail is, and it also identifies us as a tracker, and it sends us information on where the mail is and what's happening to it at that moment. It's a very complicated system. Most mailers just can't work with it on their own. They get a lot of raw data. So at Snailworks, we take that data from the postal system and we translate it, build it into reports so that, as you said, nonprofits and direct mail marketers can kind of use that to know where their mail is and when it's getting delivered.
And so as you look at the Postal Service, some people say it's a relic, something, again, that may have outlived its usefulness, but there are many of us out here who still on a daily basis look forward to going to the mailbox and getting some piece of, well, oftentimes important information. As you look at the Postal Service, how important is it? How much is it a relic of the past or a portend of important things going forward?
It's certainly been around a long time. I don't think it's a relic of the past. There's other channels that are out there that certainly compete with it, like the internet and email. That have their own unique twist. But Postal Service, first of all, it delivers physical items to people, which is very important. It has this network of people who go to every resident and every business, basically, in the United States every day. And I think the value of that network is important. And there are things that are communicated, I always hate the term junk mail, but people get pieces of mail, for example, from nonprofit organizations that are trying to raise funds. And there's really no other practical way. Nonprofits just utterly depend on the Postal Service to raise funds for charities. There's a lot of new products out there that you won't know about if you don't hear about them in the mail. And of course, there's still I still love getting mail, personal mail every day. I know when my son enlisted in the Air Force when he was at boot camp, that was the only way he could communicate with us. And he learned to enjoy the mail very quickly.
In preparation for our conversation today, Dave, I was looking up some fun facts about the Postal Service, and I was shocked. First of all, global business. The Postal Service processes and delivers 48% of the world's mail and is constantly innovating. I was shocked at that number. Should I be?
No, the Postal Service, particularly in the United States, is a very active channel. In some of the some other parts of the world, they've actually, in Europe in particular, they've done more to sort of move into other channels and privatize their postal services. So ours is still very robust and active. I'm not surprised by that number.
You know what is amazing when you think about it? And currently it's for 55 cents. Anyone can send a letter, regardless of geographic location, to anywhere in the U.S. So we don't say we're going to zone it this way. And if you want to send it from Connecticut, where I live, to California, oh, that'll be extra. Or if you want to send it to the most remote place in Montana, that will be extra. I mean, that last mile element to this, which is so complicated for cable systems and others to get their wire across to these remote places, somehow the mail service finds you.
They do. It's kind of it is a wonderful thing. I've always been amazed by what they do for 55 cents or 50 cents or whatever it may be. But I think it's a great value.
I've got to ask you this. In these fun facts, it said that as a retail giant, now I had never thought of the USPS as a retail giant, the Postal Service has the nation's largest retail network, bigger than McDonald's, Starbucks, and Walmart combined domestically. What does that mean?
Well, they've got reach everywhere in the United States. Everyone is close to a post office. And that's true. They have about, I think there's about 40,000 post offices across the United States. So you can imagine a branch with 40,000 or a business with 40,000 branches is a pretty big business. And so they have tremendous reach.
Yeah, absolutely. I hadn't thought about that. And, you know, it's very interesting, but I think a lot of people are very confused about the funding for the Postal Service. Zero tax dollars are used when it comes to operating expenses. Now, during the pandemic, we know that there was a request for a loan, and I believe it was $10 billion. So what is the relationship financially between the Postal Service and the federal government?
It may be more intimate sometimes than the Postal Service likes to acknowledge. The Postal Service is, you know, does claim that they're self-funded, and primarily they are. They sell postage, and that's where most of their funds come from. But they also do they do run debt. Then they've been losing money, not just in the pandemic year, but for a number of years before that, as mail volume went down. And so there's still, you know, there's a lot of other loans and unpaid debts to the federal government that are there. So the federal government does support them to some extent, certainly not a huge percentage of it. But I think one of the things going forward that concerns me as a user of the mail is, you know, their business model doesn't look like it's going to make money anytime soon. So how do they compensate for that? Do taxpayers support the Postal Service? I'm not sure how that what we do in the future with that.
I read an article the other day. Weary postal workers hope that President Biden will bring a new tone and a change. And there was a gentleman, Mark Dimenstein, president of the American Postal Workers Union. He said, "We want a board of governors that understands fundamentally this is not called the United States postal business. It's not a profit-making business. It's here to serve people, and that's why it's called a service." Do you think we recognize that, or this notion of go it alone and requiring them in particular to advance on their pension, which is something that I don't think is required? I know it's not in my state government because we're in arrears as it relates to pension obligations. How burdensome has that been?
Oh, it's a major factor. It's several billion dollars a year that other organizations don't have to deal with. And so that certainly impacts their profitability. In other years, they've been profitable if you take away that. They call it an uncontrollable expense. So when the Postal Service's books, they do kind of keep those as separate payments. And I think the point of it being a service is a good one. It's very important. There's some things that the Postal Service does that they do because they're mandated to, not because they would make business sense. For example, keeping those 40,000 branches open, that's a huge expense, and they could trim that a lot. But they're really these post offices really are sort of the heart of a lot of communities, and Congress won't let them close them. They don't really have the option of closing most of them. Whenever they try, Congress pretty well shuts them down. It's unusual to close a post office. And that's just one example of the burden they carry. Also, you mentioned how the cable can't get a wire to someone, or wiring a new house is difficult. But the Postal Service has a constitutional obligation to deliver mail, and it's called the Universal Service Obligation. Which they have no choice. They have to deliver mail to every household, no matter how remote it is. So you have these negative factors make it very difficult for them. So they are a service, and they carry a lot of burdens that no other business would.
Well, you mentioned your son and getting mail from him in the service. It was shocking to me that they employ as many retired veterans as they do, 97,000 military vets, and they're one of the largest employers of veterans in the U.S. And not only that, but they employ 7.3 million people. That is remarkable. It says here, mailing industry.
Now, there you go. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So that's inclusive of UPS, FedEx, Mailworks, I guess you're all lumped together.
Yeah, mail houses, printers, people like that. It's a big industry. There's a lot of people who go into supporting the mail. So the Postal Service themselves is, I think, about 600,000 employees. But then when you start bringing in the rest of the industry, all the people who create mail and who run their businesses through the mail, I think that's where the 7 million.
Thank you for helping me with that. Now, let's talk about UPS, FedEx, and their relationship with USPS. For many of us, it's a little bit confusing. Sometimes on a Sunday, I'll see a USPS truck, but I imagine that in certain cases there, they are delivering for UPS and FedEx. There's been some criticism. Are they more attentive to the needs of some of these private deliverers? Or are they as attentive to the daily needs of the American citizen? So tell us how that all works.
Well, the UPS and FedEx are different, are entirely separate organizations, of course, and they're private businesses. But they both do use the Postal Service, and they kind of exchange services in some respects. Sometimes U.S. mail will fly on FedEx planes, but more often than that, FedEx and UPS may use the Postal Service as their last mile, as the carrier who goes to the house. And I think they generally do it profitably. They're pretty smart in that respect in the deals that they make. But they do work together, which is the FedEx and UPS, I think, too, does provide some transportation for the Postal Service. And then the Postal Service provides some last mile delivery for those other companies.
Now, they did have a deal with Amazon at one time. What happened to that? That came in for some criticism, I think, because I don't know if they were making enough money on it. I guess the question is, are they business savvy enough in an environment where there's so much more competition? There are a lot of people who are very heavily capitalized to make the very intelligent decisions that you have to make about the technology going forward, including drones and other technology to deliver to the home. So are they really making good deals, I guess, is the question.
Currently, at least, that's the one profitable piece of the Postal Service. It's consistently is packages. I thought it was kind of funny that there was so much attention to that they were making bad deals on those, because that is actually where they make money. In fact, in the last quarter of 2020, they made a profit of about $300 million, and that was driven entirely by the huge package volume they had. So they didn't handle the packages very well. It was loaded well beyond their systems, but they made money on them. So, I think that's exaggerated a little bit. They have a huge delivery infrastructure in place. So I think if they were managed correctly, they could be very competitive package deliverers. That's not where they've put a lot of their might lately, and their technology is probably not as light on their feet, shall we say, as UPS or FedEx in terms of developing their technology, or Amazon, because Amazon's becoming a major player in package delivery.
Absolutely, and I think they're going in all kinds of new directions, particularly with autonomous vehicles, and we can talk about that. But Representative Bill Pascrell of New Jersey, he has been urging President Biden to take some action to change some of the players, because I know that Louis DeJoy, who came in as an acolyte of Donald Trump through a board of governors, they don't select the postmaster general directly, but through a board of governors, he said the Postal Service has gone from bad to worse to awful under this postmaster general. And it was said that toward the end of the year, only a quarter of first-class mail was processed on time in some areas of the country, leading people to delinquencies, not getting certain medicines they need. And sometimes we forget, we're not only talking about mailers that might come from a retailer, but we're talking about prescriptions and things that are life and death for some people.
Well, there's certainly no doubt that the Postal Service struggled in the fourth quarter of the year, and the delivery was pretty terrible, and they kind of acknowledged that. They were burdened by very heavy absenteeism caused by COVID-19 and an unprecedented flow of packages that just simply clogged up their facilities. They didn't have the luxury, for example, when they got at one point, UPS and FedEx stopped taking packages from some of their contract clients because they could. And the Postal Service can't turn down packages. If somebody's paying postage, they have to take them. So their facilities got overloaded. They didn't handle it very well. And as you said in the quote, they started it bad. The Postal Service, they're not always the leanest, most efficient operation in the world. When they overloaded that the way they did, and took away some of the employees, they did become pretty horrible. How much of that was from DeJoy? It's really hard to say. I'm not sure that if the former Postmaster General had still been in place, they would have done a whole lot better. It's very hard to quantify that. I do think at this point, DeJoy he's built so much bad will through a lack of communication and a lack of leadership in some cases, that even if he's not directly responsible for this, I think in the long run it's going to be very difficult for him to be the person to lead them out of this situation. I mean, that's just my opinion on that.
Well, I was wondering, Dave Lewis is with us from SnailWorks. I was wondering whether, with your interactions with the Postal Service, whether any of the cost-cutting strategies that he employed had any impact on you and your relationship with them, or from others with whom you deal, because evidently, I don't know if this is true, but I've read where there was no impact analysis or much guidance from field offices, that much of this came down directly as a fiat from him.
Pieces of that I think have been reported, some fairly, some not. For example, removing sorting equipment, that has been in play for years because the volume of mail has dropped since 2007. I believe it's dropped from about 212 billion pieces a year to 150 billion, just because a lot of first-class mail in particular is being displaced by online bill payment. So those machines were coming out. He didn't really change that. Same with collection boxes. A lot of the collection boxes were removed, and they were already slated to be removed. Now, he did make some changes as far as trimming overtime and having trucks, stay on schedule whether they were loaded or not. And that was very short-lived. It didn't last that long because it got so much bad PR. But those did seem to be not really researched, just kind of thrown into place at a particularly delicate time to be doing that kind of thing.
As you look at a lot of people now working from home, and we don't know how long that phenomenon will continue. Though I can tell you, living in Connecticut, Dave, a lot of people have moved out of New York, and they're still working in New York. So I don't know. It would seem like they're going to be home at least 2 or 3 days a week for some time. Does that add to the importance of the Postal Service? Because people need a lot of business-related communication, or they need packages so that they can look at product that they're developing or work with another colleague. Do you think that this makes the Postal Service and its necessity even greater?
Well, I think the necessity of the Postal Service is there anyway. I'm not sure if, you know, it's interesting. I'm not sure if work from home does. For some research, I work with direct marketers and fundraisers a great deal. We try to mail to people, in their businesses, for example, and it's hard to mail to businesses now. So sometimes they're resorting to other channels like email because people, they mail to the business, but nobody's there. So in that respect, it certainly in marketing to businesses, Postal Service, I think, has been hurt by this change of people working home because they can't find them. They don't know where the people are. But certainly delivering packages and being there as a way to move physical material around, I think that role remains just as important and probably more so because people are at home more.
Now, the Postal Service sometimes does cry wolf, Dave, and I'm not certain, again, as an outsider, whether, in fact, imminent danger or insolvency is just ahead. But they do cry that a lot, particularly during the pandemic. And adding to the pandemic, of course, and you talked about the difficulties of keeping a workforce, healthy, is the fact that we do see this overall decline prior to the pandemic in the use of the mails. How creative is the post office in responding to all these changes? I read recently someone saying, you know, if you're not anticipating what's going on in terms of external forces affecting your business, you're not going to be able to stay in business terribly long.
Well, they certainly try. They do. They have some innovative things that they do. One of their focuses that we see in a lot of the events they've held, particularly in this is in pre-pandemic days, is to try to tie the mail into other marketing channels. For example, a lot of people, there's one program called Informed Delivery, and you may belong to that or you may subscribe, which is they'll send an email to consumers telling them actually sending them pictures of what's going to be in their mailbox that day. Right. And they give advertisers and the nonprofits who are in the mailbox an opportunity to sort of put a button that clips people to the links in that into that email. So it's kind of it's an innovative, kind of neat product. And they have about, I think, 35 million consumers are subscribing to that now. And that's in about 3 years they got that many consumers to subscribe. So they're trying to do innovative programs like that. And that's helpful from a marketing perspective. In terms of their technology and delivery, I think they have not been as responsive as some of their competitors have been. And certainly they do have a new competitor in terms of the internet that's much more difficult to deal with.
As you look at different forms of mail, I think most of us who are basically consumers, though I have worked in the nonprofit arena from time to time, and of course the various different stages or forms of postage, third class, second class, book rate, so forth. I mean, is there a lot of distinction, and how important are those various classes that are set up for different kinds of marketers and mailers?
Kind of funny, you gave a very sensible first class, second class, third class. They don't do that. They've changed all the names, which is they like to innovate with names sometimes. So you have first class mail. That's a good name. They kept that one. And then second class mail is now periodicals, which is descriptive. It's magazines and newspapers.
Sure.
And that particular class of mail is very, very strained right now as publishing industry has been a hard hit in the last few years and replaced by online substitutes. And it loses a lot of money for the Postal Service. It's not a profitable class of mail. You know, ironically, it's kind of the one class of mail that people really do want to get. They subscribe to a magazine, they want to get it. But it's a pretty big money loser for the Postal Service. It's not a big volume of mail. It's probably one of their smaller classes. The old third class mail has gone through a lot of name changes. These days it's called USPS Marketing Mail is the official name. And that would be for any kind of advertising mail you get that's not first class mail. So whether it's supermarket flyers or fundraisers from charities or coupons from the mail, any kind of marketing that comes is considered marketing mail is what they call it now. It was standard mail for a long time. And so that's the old third class mail. And that is, it's their biggest source of volume, I think, right now, although first class mail still generates more revenue because there's a lot of discounts for that marketing mail. It's a lot less expensive than first class mail. The names are hard to keep track of.
Now, the Postal Service is the only organization in the country that has the resources, the infrastructure, and logistical context to get into every residential and business address in the nation, according to what I read. I hope that's still accurate. And the question there is, there have been some discussions about allowing them to get more creative with the products that they send in and distribute. For example, I recall a conversation recently about whether they could deliver liquor. And I'm just wondering, again, how creative they are, how much help and buy-in they need from Congress and others to change their mandate a little bit or expand it. I'm wondering whether they'd like to do some of those things, as they do see a lot of things falling off, a lot of people paying their bills now online, even though we have cyber attacks every other day. and that probably only keeps the older folks like me from doing everything online, because the young people don't seem to be bothered about the cyber attacks. But tell me, I mean, about the liquor delivery or other things such.
And that's one of the restraints they have. And there's a lot of lobbying. People who sell liquor and distribute liquor have a lot of lobbying money. So for some reason, it's okay for UPS and FedEx to deliver liquor. That doesn't threaten the fabric of our society with alcoholism. But heaven forbid that the Postal Service deliver liquor. So yeah, that's kind of where one of the arenas where Congress makes the rules, and Congress says they can't deliver liquor, and so they can't. It's just one of those things they get from being a government organization.
How important is it for a Postmaster General and his or her leadership going forward as they look at a changing environment for mail and delivery, and they do have this infrastructure in place, to get even more creative in the use of it, or in relation to the private competitors, or even entering into new business relationships with some of those privateers who actually know a lot about the business and are always keeping up on the costs related and efficiencies that are going to be needed?
I think it's very important. That's the kind of leadership that they really do need, is to try to innovate and shape what they're going to look like in the future. The past few postmasters general, I think, have been able administrators who grew up through the ranks of the Postal Service. And I don't think they really had the innovative perspective that we might have hoped for. And even a lot of the executive vice president types who were in marketing and other areas, really, they kind of shuttled around from different positions. They probably weren't world-class experts on marketing and things like that to innovate in some of these areas. And so I think the leadership that comes from the Board of Governors and from the Postmaster General in the future is going to be very important. And also in working with Congress to decide what the Postal Service needs to be down the road. Is it a service that's supported by the government? Or is it a business that's supported by mailers and by stamps?
How do you think they did overall as it relates to the ballots and all the mail-in requirements? Obviously, that was the moment in time when there was a lot of criticism as to whether they were working hand in glove with the administration to make it more difficult. How do you think they acquitted themselves during that period?
I'm glad you asked that, because we were very active in tracking ballots in some states, and working with other mailers who did as well. And the Postal Service, I think, did a spectacular job with the ballots. They were much better than they do with mail in general. Virtually all the ballot mail was delivered, the overnight incoming ballots in particular. The results were very good, and I do think in the end that the employees and the management of the Postal Service, they're very proud of what they do, and they're patriotic, and they understood the importance of that mission, and they did a great job on it.
Vertical takeoffs and landing aircraft. It's far afield from the little trucks that we see going around, but in China, they are looking at about 30% of same-day package deliveries by 2040 as networks scale dramatically, bringing down the cost of delivery using electric aircraft. Is that something that you see? I mean, again, they are an employer of a lot of people, as are FedEx and UPS. Do you think we're going to see, I know I had one gentleman who was a guest on the podcast recently who thought that these kinds of deliveries would much more be in the realm of what autonomous vehicles would be doing in the future, much more so than individuals giving up the car to the machine. So the question is, do you see that?
Gosh, that's hard to predict that far in the future. And one of the challenges the Postal Service has is a very active and engaged labor union who would, I think, pretty vigorously fight any kind of autonomous vehicles. One thing that was, this was a couple years ago, one of the suggestions that the Postal Service was looking at using some autonomous vehicles as sort of on a test basis. And one of the things they determined is that every autonomous vehicle would always have to have a postal employee in it to make sure it was operating safely. And so that's like the firemen in a locomotive shoveling coal after they stop using coal. They're certainly not going to be the ones to lead us in that direction.
That's right. Well, that's called feather bedding. And I remember when I worked for a 2-year stint as the assistant to the commissioner of education in our state, and the first state employee I met was the elevator operator, though the elevator had been automated a couple of years before. So I do understand the concept. Well, neither snow, nor rain, nor heat, nor gloom of night stays these couriers from the swift completion of their appointed rounds. And we're going back to the United States Postal Service, its origins, even prior to America becoming the nation that it is. And again, it's worth remembering that they're still here. They're still really important to us, and it is a remarkable service. And the first Postmaster General, you know who that was, Dave?
Benjamin Franklin.
That's right. Okay. A history lesson today as we go forward on America Trends. Dave Lewis, snailworks.com. And again, just remind anybody listening who you are again and what service you might be able to provide them.
Yeah, absolutely. We work with commercial mailers to track mail to let them know when it's being delivered and help them work with really all kinds of postal programs to make them easier to use.
All right. Well, it was great talking to you, Dave. I really appreciate your time today, and I'll let you get back to work. But thanks for being part of America Trends.
And thank you.